Yes, Buzz Killers. It's Christmas season here in the United States. It's Christmas season in lots of parts of the world. And of course, we couldn't finish the year without talking about Christmas and all the myths and misunderstandings and the history of it in recent times. And fortunately for you, as is always the case, when I have to do an important show, who do I turn to? It's Professor Philip Nash from Penn State. Thanks for coming on the show, Professor.
It's my pleasure. I'm the Santa Claus of Buzzkill Nation.
Well, I love what you've, as all of you veteran Buzzkillers know, we meaning Professor Nash, writes up an outline for these things, and he calls this Buzz the Night Before Christmas instead of Was the Night Before Christmas. So it shows you the kind of cutting-edge comedy that historians are known for.
Yes, that's what that was.
But before we start, you have a recommendation for the Buzzkillers.
I have a holiday video recommendation.
Holiday
video recommendation, which I don't know if the youngsters would appreciate it so much, but I still get a kick out of it. You may recall in the early 90s on Saturday Night Live, Chris Farley had a recurring character named Matt Foley, a down on his luck motivational speaker.
Yeah, the Down by the River guy.
His first appearance, I think, is the most famous, where he's there with David Spade and Christina Applegate. But he did a later show. I think it's from 1993, and I'm assuming it's from Christmas 1993, where he plays a shopping mall Santa.
Yeah.
and people need to go and see that again. It is, in my view, it is brilliant. It's only about 5 minutes.
Yeah. We'll put a link to the YouTube version of it.
Put a link to it, yeah. On there. Right, because it's such good history.
But I can hear so many of the buzzlings here in the Institute, but also younger people across the across our listenership saying, okay, boomers.
Exactly. No, this is a an unabashed boomer recommendation, no question.
Yeah. Well, Christmas is a huge topic, big topic. What's your angle here?
Right. And by the way, I found out in doing a little digging for this, there is a vast literature on the history of Christmas. And as usual, I'm just going to very selectively skate across the surface, but...
Oh, skate across the surface. That's a good wintertime
metaphor. You like that? You like that sort of winter reference? So I would just make two simple, maybe obvious points, but one is that Christmas in various ways has long, and I mean long, been fought over. Mm-hmm. There's a book out there, the title of which is Christmas in the Crosshairs.
Yeah, that'll go on the bookshelf, the Buzzkill book.
Okie doke. And that's because Christmas has been a bone of contention for a long, long time. People fighting over it, trying to drag it in one direction or another. That is, in some ways, as old as the Christmas holiday itself. That would be one of my points here. Mm-hmm, and the other point is that one of the big issues when Christmas comes up is sort of the commercialization of Christmas.
Right.
My second thesis here would be that the commercialization of Christmas has been underway for a long, long time. And maybe, I'm not going to assume anything, but maybe for a lot longer than time than a lot of Buzzkillers might think.
Oh, okay. Well, let's take it all the way back, at least to give Buzzkillers an introduction. What was Christmas like back in the day? I didn't mean way back in the day, the ancient day.
Right. Well, and if not millennia, certainly for centuries, and this is in the category of gross generalizations, but for a long, long time, where Christmas or the equivalent was celebrated, for a long, long time, it was a celebration, and sometimes it was very indulgent celebrations. In other words, they were about partying, they were about drinking a lot, they were about having a good time, and then you would have people who would try to tone that down or pull it away from sort of the celebratory nature of it. And so, in other words, that struggle, the fact that you had these sort of indulgent celebrations and then efforts to sort of clean them up or make them a little less rowdy or ribald, those go way, way back down. Those go back, you know, the precursor to Christmas was the ancient Roman holiday of Saturnalia, if I'm saying it correctly.
Yeah.
And it lasted for several days in December. And at that time,
in Roman times,
in ancient Rome, in Roman times, in ancient Rome, there were people who complained that these celebrations were too materialistic, that people were spending too much money on them, and we shouldn't be doing it. So, I mean, that's going way, way back.
Yeah.
to fast forward to the more modern period, the late modern period that I'm always much more comfortable with. There's sort of an irony here because later on there was a generation of scolds who got us into sort of the current wave of commercialization of Christmas. They got us into this in the first place. In other words, it's sort of ironic because it was these folks trying to clean it
Oh,
up.
right. Okay.
Because in the pre-Victorian era in the United States and Great Britain, at least, Christmas was not about gifts. It was about
Yeah,
party.
yep.
And working people, people who work very, very hard on the farms and subsistence farming, they loved and came to cherish the break between Christmas and New Year's as a time to basically eat, drink, and be merry. That was the whole purpose of it.
But this changes in the Victorian era, and one way of us looking about one way of us looking at this is, how did the Victorian era screw things up?
Because they also often seem to.
Yeah.
But yeah, in the Victorian era, in the West, you had with the growth of industrialization, the growing industrial cities, the elites and the emerging middle class viewed this drunken revelry among working class with growing alarm.
Oh, okay.
They didn't like this big party, especially once it was, in the city. It's going to be larger, it's going to be more concentrated. It's in working classes. And so basically what happens in the Victorian era is that the interests of business leaders and religious leaders come into an alignment, and they move to reshape Christmas into sort of a pious family holiday centered on the home and not in the taverns and the pubs.
Right. Okay.
And by the way, at the same time, not coincidentally, some of these same leaders push to shorten the Christmas break, mainly to get the workers back to work. Because remember,
Oh.
especially in this early industrial capitalism, it's all about, the super long workday and squeezing as much labor out of workers as you possibly could. And the pre-Victorian Christmas holiday was a little too long for their tastes.
Right.
So at the same time that they're trying to reshape the holiday, they're also making the holiday shorter. But in the family setting, showing an appreciation of loved ones with gift giving increased. And once again, another irony, while once Christmas was seen to be as a threat to productivity, pretty soon manufacturers and other people in business come to see Christmas as instead an opportunity to promote consumption and thus increase the bottom line.
Oh.
And you see this already in the late 19th century.
Yeah.
And I have to mention at this point, when I was growing up in the 1970s, I'm pretty sure it was one of my school teachers. I don't know why. One of my school teachers played for us this satirical record at Christmas time. And I remember very clearly on one of the, it was, sort of like sketch comedy. And I remember clearly in one of the skits, someone announced, and I'm quoting, "There are two S's in Christmas and they're both dollar signs."
Gosh, it sounds like you went to Buzzkill Elementary School.
I must have.
When we went to elementary school, that might have been considered un-American.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I must have had a pretty subversive teacher, at least in that one class. But in other words, and that was a recognition that Christmas is all about money among cynics anyway.
Yeah.
But a key player in the commercialization, once again, relatively early on, you see as we enter the early 20th century, and that's the new department stores, which obviously are
Right.
at least this form of department store was not or in decline in our era, but in the early 20th century, all the major cities, often they were local chains, but they had these sometimes massive department stores. And pretty soon these department stores had, and not just in New York City, they were known for their lavish holiday window displays, which became basically destinations of their own. In other words, people would go downtown just to see the display at Macy's or
Yeah.
wherever.
Yeah, that's a big thing that people don't remember, or most people don't remember because they
Right.
weren't born, that department stores not only had everything in theory, they were destinations.
Right. Well, and they had these massive display windows,
Yeah.
and they would spend a lot of money decorating for the holidays, and people would love to go and see them. And it's in this context we should also understand Macy's, speaking of which, launching its
Major
th
department
a
store, yeah.
major department store, launching its Thanksgiving Day parade in 1924,
Wow.
which was a lot earlier than I thought it had its origins. And once again, and I would say probably not coincidentally, right? Macy's in the 20s, that is in some ways the heyday of the modern department store.
Sure.
Although I should point out that it was a department store called Eaton's in Canada, which pioneered the practice of a Thanksgiving Day parade in 1905.
Canada is our second largest market, so to speak, and Canadian buzzkillers will be happy to know that they pioneered that.
Hats off to Canada yet again.
But we should remind buzzkillers, and especially those of buzzkillers who aren't in North America, that the Thanksgiving Day parade has come to mean the start of the Christmas season.
Absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, and it's a huge spectacle in places like New York City.
But I mean, it's just a cynic in me. But surely, maybe it's just a cynic in me. But surely, it's gotten more commercial in recent decades.
It has, and I think a lot of us, myself included, are painfully aware of this fact. But I was still surprised to see how far back some of this goes. So, for example, if you look at the, you know, I guess technically not about Christmas, but it's certainly about the Christmas shopping season. If you look at something like Black Friday, which is certainly a commercial phenomenon in recent decades or recent years, much more so than when I was growing up, there's no question. And for those of you who don't know what Black Friday is, Black Friday is this sort of shopping frenzy in the United States, which is on the Friday right after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, places offer special Black Friday discounts. There are runs on stores and stuff like that.
Right, and it's my understanding the special discounts are a relatively recent thing. Only in the last few decades, I think. The origins of this use of the term Black Friday is not totally clear, but it's pretty clear that what it refers to is that Black Friday is one of the most profitable days in the year. So this is where a lot of retailers, if not for the whole season, certainly for that day, operate well into the black. In other words, in positive territory, as opposed to in the red, running a deficit. So it's about,
I thought it was about, people called it Black Friday because it was the cynics who didn't want to go anywhere near the stores on that Friday because they were jammed.
That was my assumption as well, but apparently no, it refers to the business side of this and operating in the black. And, you know, I forget what the percentages are, but I know that in recent years, retailers have relied, maybe not on Black Friday, but certainly the holiday season, to make the lion's share of their profits for the entire year. That's been true for a while, you know, especially in an economy where, you know, consumer spending is now something like 70% of U.S. GDP.
Wow.
We have long been dependent on consumer spending as the main driver of our economy, which is not always the case.
Yeah.
But a little factoid here, U.S. holiday shopping in 2019 amounted to $730 billion in sales.
Wow. Wow.
And I realize I'm not putting that in context, but what I'm here to tell you, that's a pretty big number by pretty much any measure. But anyway,
that is a big number here in the
industry. Well, I think we can all agree that that's a big number. Anyway, the holiday use of the term Black Friday, so in other words, use of that term in this context, first appeared in print in 1966.
Wow.
And that surprised me. It also surprised me that it was in the 1950s. So well before that some people started calling in sick the Friday after Thanksgiving in order to go shopping.
Oh, right.
And I'm pretty sure that that is sort of the origins of what we now take for granted in the United States, which is the four-day weekend, right? You get off Thanksgiving, you get off Black Friday, and then you've got that weekend. It was not always so. And I get the impression that this was sort of from the bottom up. In other words, lots of people calling in sick on that Friday. And so then a lot of employers just figured, you know what? What's the point? Let's just give them a 2-day holiday at the end of Thanksgiving week. So that's sort of interesting from a almost like a social history standpoint.
Well, it won't be surprising to a lot of buzzkillers that a lot of people think that a lot of the modern commercialization of the American economy and the consumer economy stems from the 1950s.
Yeah, and for good reasons, right? It is, as I always tell my students, remember the 1950s comes after, well, to make money count, about 15 years of deprivation
through the Great
Depression and World War II. And that's one of the reasons why the 1950s is such a consumer-driven economy in so many ways. But once again, in some ways, this goes back even further. And here we have to. I almost feel like FDR is kind of like Churchill. I feel like FDR has to be mentioned in all shows one way or another.
Yeah. There are some other people too. Yeah,
I know. I'm going to go ahead and do this here. Because for years and years, I believe it was Lincoln who established Thanksgiving as a holiday.
Right,
And then
right.
for decades, well into the 20th century, Thanksgiving was always the last Thursday of November.
Right.
And then in 1939, Thanksgiving fell during the 5th week of November.
Right. One of those calendar things, yeah.
Right, one of those calendar anomalies. And for whatever reason, that fact in 1939 led a whole slew of retailers basically to freak out because it would have made the holiday shopping season too short. And so they lobbied President Roosevelt to move it to the 4th Thursday of November, and he agreed. The problem is, he did this on October 31st. And already a lot of people had made their holiday plans. And so a lot of people were very, very unhappy. Some people were so unhappy they started calling it Franksgiving after Franklin D.
Ha
Roosevelt.
ha
Hey, there's a 1930s humor for
ha.
you.
Oh boy.
Only 25 states went along with FDR's proposed change at that point. But the problem, if I can call it that, was solved at the end of 1941 when Congress, an act of Congress, they made it. I mean, Thanksgiving on the 4th Thursday of November, regardless. So if you're wondering, like, why is Thanksgiving the 4th November in fourth Thursday, I should say, in November, that's where it happens.
Okay, well, we're kind of going, as we do so often on this show, down a cynical road, and it seems to be all about money and commerce, but it's not just all about money and commerce, right?
No, not even close. And I'm just going to touch on this very briefly, but there are many, many other facets to sort of the historical struggles over Christmas and over all of its many symbols and all of its many practices. Christmas and its symbols get put to many, many uses over the years. And for example, look at Santa Claus. And by the way, himself, all by himself, is a major bone of contention.
Right,
And I
right.
know that I think it still happened that you can still see recent evidence where in Europe, for example, there's a lot of pushback against Santa Claus as sort of this basically representative of American Christmas hegemony. And so they push back and for example, promote Saint Nicholas as the alternative to this sort of American Santa Claus. So there's a lot of that going on. But Santa has often gone to war, for example. In 1863, apparently this was in the United States, the first use of Santa Claus to support a war, in this case, obviously the Civil War. And you can find a cover of the famous publication Harper's Weekly with a Thomas Nast illustration. And on the cover, Santa Claus is bringing gifts to U.S. troops in the middle of the war. And if you fast forward to World War II, you can find all sorts of course, you had much more sort of popular culture that we were recognizing, fall color, et cetera, and you could buy Christmas cards in on the Christmas card, Uncle Sam is giving Axis leaders the boot, and the boot is marked U.S. war stamps. So of course they're selling. Often these things are often selling war bonds or getting people to enlist or whatever. And down at the bottom of the illustration, you have Santa with his reindeer, and Santa is giving the victory sign. So in other words. So it's Christmas time, right? During the rest of the year, you would just have Uncle Sam kicking Axis butt. And in this case, Santa is there to sort of give his seal of approval. But by this point, commercialization is already well underway. So why not nationalization? And that's what a lot of this stuff, a lot of the sort of developments in the history of Christmas are often about nationalization, right? About making Christmas or making Santa Claus. Or making the way you celebrate Christmas something that's peculiar to your nation. And for example, especially in wartime, not surprisingly, a lot of
Sure.
countries did this.
Now, Professor, we've mentioned FDR. Now we're talking about World War II. We're getting very close, dangerously close to me asking you, what about the Nazis? Is there a Nazi element to Christmas that we need to enlighten people about?
Of course there is. There almost always is. Just like you use a swastika to sell a paperback book at the bookstore, you have to talk about Christmas and the Nazis. But it is actually kind of interesting, I think, because remember, and they are not alone in this. For example, the Soviet Union spent a lot, especially in the 20s and 30s, spent a lot of effort trying to basically blow up Christmas and to do away with it. And by the way, often these efforts are unsuccessful. But before the Third Reich, the German left, especially German communists and also to some extent German social democrats, they often opposed Christmas. And for some of the reasons you might expect, right? It was considered too commercial. It was considered basically a way to pull the wool over the eyes of the people, et cetera, et cetera.
Too capitalist.
Right, exactly, too capitalist. And so that's unfortunate in this case because it allowed the Nazis to pose as defenders of Christmas. And in the lead up to them coming to power, like in the late 20s and early 30s, you see quite a bit of this. After coming to power, the Nazis cleverly associated themselves with the charity of the season. And for example, people who
All
know about
right,
the Third
okay.
Reich, they probably heard of the Winterhilfswerk, which is the sort of winter help work, literally, which was this massive campaign the Nazis had every holiday season where they would collect and distribute aid to the poor people.
Wow.
And especially in the Great Depression, this was seen as a very, in other words, a very clever, right? This was a way to sort of associate Nazi rule with charity. As in other areas, however, the totalitarian Nazis sought what's called Gleichschaltung, in other words, to align everything with the Nazi party and the Nazi belief system, right? It's a totalitarian system. So they sought, in this case, they sought to Germanize and also paganize the holidays and to sort of remove a lot of the Christian aspects from it, which is it's a tall order in such a thoroughly Christian country as Germany in the 20th century. But for example, the Nazis, with their sort of cult of struggle and their cult of warfare, they had a big problem with the peacefulness of Christianity. And in Berlin, at least at one point at Christmas time, they hung banners which read, and I'm quoting, "Down with a Christ who allows himself to be crucified. The German God cannot be a suffering God. He is a God of power and strength."
Oh, that's pretty hardcore.
It is pretty hardcore and it gives you a good idea of how the Nazis viewed Christianity and how fraught that relationship could be. But they, once again, they left few stones unturned. Hymns and songs were amended. Words like Hosanna and Hallelujah were removed because they had were sort of Hebrew in origin. In an Advent calendar, I've seen an illustration in an Advent calendar, Saint Nicholas and the Christ child are replaced by Knecht Ruprecht, who is essentially a modern version of the Norse god Wotan. In other words, and he is the one who's bringing gifts to the household rather than Saint
So that
Nicholas.
really is paganizing it, yeah.
Pretty much, and they would redo some of the, for example, the Christmas carol, Silent Night, or Stille Nacht, as the Germans call it, they would often change the lyrics. And I believe it's the second verse. So I'll read you the second verse of the Nazi version of Silent Night, Holy Night. So the first words are the same: Silent Night, Holy Night, all is calm, all is bright. Adolf Hitler is Germany's star, showing us greatness and glory afar, bringing us Germans the might.
Oh my. Oh
And
my.
yeah, I mean, that almost sounds like a parody of Nazism,
Mel Brooks
but
doing
it
it.
isn't. Right, exactly. But no, that's the version they wanted kids to learn. As you might imagine, there was a lot of pushback from Germans, including during the war, including from soldiers. And in the book we'll put on the bookshelf, it talks about how soldiers would write and complain about how basically the Christmas that was being presented to them in various ways, including in army publications, wasn't the Christmas they grew up with, and basically what the hell's going on. But one way, I have to end this section by talking about how the Nazis during the war helped preserve their popularity around Christmas time by making more food and more luxury items available in stores. And they did this during World War II, as they did a lot of things, either directly or indirectly, by plundering the East. In other words, a lot of the stuff was stolen. There were cases where, especially among settlers, German settlers who were basically relocated to occupy areas of Poland, there was, I think late in the war, there was at least some instances where the Christmas goods they were distributing to German settlers were goods they had plundered from victims of the Holocaust.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that's the Nazi Christmas in a nutshell for me.
Well, and that goes way down the, that really brings us down the sort of morale and the happiness end of what a Christmas stories can be. But we can't just leave the buzz killers there, can we? I mean, we're
No.
not we can't leave them with the image of, I mean, we it's good that they now know that this image of what the Nazis did to Christmas, but we can't just leave them with that as the last thought.
No, I of course not. I would never do that. And obviously that's a particularly distressing version,
Yeah.
but Christmas is like a lot of holidays. It's like a lot of social practices. It can be twisted and turned and used for good and used for evil and can be distorted and exploited. That's nothing new. That happens all the time,
Yeah.
especially something as important to people as the holiday season. The good news is the fact that all these struggles have gone on for centuries, it's clear to me that Christmas has proven pretty indestructible. That's one thing. Another thing is that Christmas in history has often been a time of relief or rejuvenation in hard times. If you're in the middle of a war or in the middle of the Great Depression, or in our case, in the middle of a horrible pandemic, you still have a holiday season, and that holiday season can be a time of relief or rejuvenation again. And so I would just, once again, it's sort of banal and obvious, but I would say don't let anyone tell you what the holidays have to be. And don't let the commercializers ruin it for you. Those S's in Christmas don't have to be dollar signs. It can be a great time. It can be a warm time. It can be a time of love and charity and sharing. And there's nothing preventing folks from making that happen again and again and again, despite all the twists and turns of history. So I'll just wish all the buzzkillers happy holidays.
Well, and thank you for all of this. It's certainly given us Christmas in a new light, many different new lights. And we'd like to say happy holidays to you, and thanks for coming on the show.
Always my pleasure. Hope to see you in 2021.
Yes, absolutely. And Buzzkillers, we will talk to all of you next week.